What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
The following program was pre-recorded, and the views expressed do not necessarily represent those of this station or its management.
We don't need no education. We don't need no thought control.
Get ready to take notes, because school is now in session. Tackling the biggest issues in education, this is Education America. Save the classroom, save the country. Here are your hosts, Headmaster Rebecca Hagstrom and co-host Mark Durkin.
And welcome to Education America, where we are once again taking steps to save the classroom so that we can save the country. Come along with us here every Saturday night on AM 1280 The Patriot, right here at 6 o'clock, where K-12 education is the playing field. And as the 16th President Abraham Lincoln so succinctly stated, he said, "The philosophy of the schoolroom in one generation will be the philosophy of government in the next." I'm Mark Durkin, joined again by my co-host and founder of Liberty Classical Academy, Rebecca Hagstrom.
Yeah, good evening. Nice to see you again, Mark.
Nice to see you as well. Mm-hmm. It's been cold.
Mm-hmm. I'm ready for that spring break.
Right. We never get used to it, no matter how many years we've been living
especially
here, right?
Especially you, because you've been here. You haven't actually lived here that long, have
no,
you?
No, I've lived here for almost 30 years,
what?
Actually.
Oh, I didn't remember that it was that long.
A long time. You never
but
get
you're
used to it.
Aren't you a South Carolina boy or something?
No,
like
no. That's where I have some family. But I've kind of lived all over the place, Massachusetts.
Okay.
But yeah, I've been here.
So
30 years.
Cold,
used to it.
Okay,
exactly.
All right.
Yeah. Well, in December, the Minnesota Department of Education released the final draft of the social studies standards, and soon they're going to begin the formal rulemaking process to place the standards in Minnesota's K-12 classrooms. Now, what people need to understand is that this third and final draft includes what the Minnesota Department of Education would acknowledge as a major shift from current standards. And so our guest tonight, she's going to join us, and she's going to talk about how ethnic studies standards threatens to turn our state schools into extremist boot camps.
Yeah, I know. That's pretty scary, isn't it? Well, joining us again by telephone to discuss the specifics surrounding the third draft of the state standards, which especially we're going to talk about the ethnic studies strand, is Catherine Kirsten. And Catherine is a writer, an attorney, and a senior policy fellow and director at the Center of the American Experiment, having also served as its chair from 1996 to 1998. Catherine has also served as a Metro columnist for the Star Tribune from 2005 to 2008. She's also served as an opinion columnist for the paper between 1996 and 2013. Catherine was also a founding director of the center and served as its chair from 1996 to 1998. Catherine, it's always a pleasure to have you on our show. And I just want to say thank you for joining us again.
Well, wonderful to be with you.
All right.
So, Catherine, let's go ahead and begin our discussion tonight with the recently released third and final draft of these social studies standards. You know, what people need to know is that within the standards, the first ethnic studies standard teaches that a student's personal identity is determined by his or her group status. You know, what can you tell us about the second and the third ethnic studies standards, and what types of history lessons does this draft specifically seek to replace?
Well, the focus on ethnic studies, which did not appear by that name or as a so-called fifth strand in the first draft, is very much focused not on content knowledge, the kind of knowledge students need to be informed citizens. It is focused literally on basically grooming kids to be political activists and specifically to resist fundamental American institutions. So the second of these three ethnic studies standards, which will be embedded at K through 12 curricula, is called resistance. Mm-hmm. And in that standard, kids are going to be instructed to organize together, take action to resist America's, quote, systemic and coordinated exercises of power against marginalized, oppressed groups. Mm. And remember, kids are going to be essentially assessed on these, on meeting these standards. They're going to be assessed on whether they take action and organize to do the bidding of the extremist ideologues who drafted these standards.
You know, it is just shocking. And when you consider the fact that this is for K-12, this isn't just for, you know, high school kids. And it's such an all-pervasive viewpoint that filters down into the other strands, too. Isn't that correct, Catherine?
Exactly. It's embedded in all of them in some way or another. I mean, take geography, for example. It is this ethnic studies so-called critical lens, which is basically, you know, critical race theory and then some, is very evident through the K-12 geography standards, for example, as well as a separate strand of ethnic studies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's really shaping the entire focus of all of the social studies standards.
Many branches on the same tree.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yes.
Good point. Well, now that we know a little bit about what history lessons the new proposed standards seek to really eliminate, or you're kind of talking a little bit more about what's going to be the focus. But if these new standards are adopted with this ethnic studies focus in place, what will our state's children be learning for the next 10 years?
Well, you know, I've given just a few examples in what I've written about this, of these new standards and benchmarks. For example, kids will learn to view themselves and their classmates as members of what the standards call racialized hierarchies based on dominant European beauty standards. How about that? Or they'll learn that their family's religious beliefs are really the source of, quote, caste systems that are, quote, used to justify imperialism, colonization, warfare, and chattel slavery. So that'll be Christianity. And these kids, as I said, are supposed to resist America's, you know, supposed systemic abuse of power against marginalized groups, et cetera.
Unbelievable. And can you talk a little bit about, too, what is actually going to be missing from the curriculum?
Sure.
Yeah, that would be great for people
to
know.
What will be missing is content of almost every kind, especially in history and geography. So that means forget about, you know, George Washington and the founders. Forget about Abraham Lincoln and the Civil War, World War One, World War Two, that is the causes of these events, you know, the ideas that behind them, who was involved, what happened in these absolutely central conflicts and events. I mean, that's just not in there.
Well, and what's really frightening about that is that we've already noticed that the generations, the recent generations, are not well versed in American history or world history. And now we're going to further sever this understanding of history from our students moving forward if we continue down this path. Yeah, it's really
just a complete removal of where we have come from and having no idea where we're going.
Which, don't we always say, you know, if those who don't know their history, then they're bound to repeat the mistakes of the past. You know,
that's right.
Very concerning.
Well, we know that the Minnesota Department of Education is a big player in all of this. You know, Catherine, what are the primary goals of the department as it pertains to ethnic studies and their, as you've written, their relentless fixation in this third draft of this, of the social studies standards?
Yes, well, the department purposely removed content content experts, subject matter experts from the committee. They want to. They really didn't. There was only one historian, one academic historian on the drafting committee. She was an expert in basically slave religions, or in particular religions of the Caribbean and voodoo. This is not someone who understands the Federalist Papers.
Right. Needless to say,
it gives you a sense of the goals. The goal here really is to disrupt and dismantle the fundamental social and political institutions of this country. They use resistance type language right there in the standards. But if you dig a little deeper and you look at what ethnic studies is as a subject matter, so to speak, nationally, it's purveyors, and these are people who have deep roots in California and the student strikes in 1968 and the creation of the so-called Third World Liberation. But I'm not kidding.
Wow. Somehow that's not surprising.
They are very clear. They are opposed to capitalism. They are. They want to change the world and basically reshape it in their own image. Mm. And it's really, people have to understand this is really happening.
Yeah.
I saw recently that the Minneapolis Star Tribune endorsed ethnic studies.
They did.
Both Minneapolis. Yep. In a column by their their editorial page folks, yes, and they endorsed it in the Minneapolis and St. Paul public schools, where there will now be required in coming years required ethnic studies courses to graduate, and also endorsed it at the state level, and they said it's got to be done right, but there's no way to do this right.
No, yeah. Well, you've got to wonder how much research do they do before they write a column like that saying that they endorse it. They use such good language, right? Doesn't want to be in favor of ethnic studies? It implies that you want to learn about other people groups around the world and what have you. That sounds like all well and good. But when you look into these studies or these standards, which is not that hard to do, I would hope that nobody would endorse this without going and reading them for themselves and seeing how they're going to play out.
They don't do that. They do not do that.
So frustrating. And like you say, the ramifications are huge. So you were talking a little bit about the history of this, and I know you're going to be doing a piece on that in an upcoming magazine. So we'll probably go into that more in depth in a few months. But the theories and assumptions in the ethnic studies ideological lens are laid out in a 2017 essay titled "The Need for Ethical Studies Curricula in Minnesota Schools." Ethnic studies. Sorry about that. What can you tell us about the lead author of this piece and their organization, and what does it say about the historical purpose behind these standards?
It's very important to know this. The lead author of this piece was Jonathan Hamilton, who is a very influential member of the committee that drafted these standards. He is also a professor at McAllister College, and he's a leader of a group called Education for Liberation Minnesota. And this is a group that has described our state's K-12 education system as a, quote, white supremacist puzzle that must be taken apart and exposed for the lie that it is.
Wow.
And this article in which Hamilton was lead author says that K-12 standards have been created in order to maintain the existing power structure privileging whites.
Oh, my goodness.
Says, ethnic studies is a political struggle to change that system. I mean, listen, people.
Yeah, the word.
This is what they want to do.
They want systemic change, and it's not for the better. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Again, you got to wonder. I'm sure this gentleman, I'm just guessing, he's probably white. No, not that that should matter. Oh, he's not. Oh, okay. Okay. I was just going to say the thing that shocks me about this is that so often what we see is that there are a lot of elite whites that are pushing this agenda. And I know you and I have some common friends who are not white, and they are some really strong black women, and they get so frustrated that some of these elitist whites seem to tell them what they should want as black moms.
True. And I just spoke with a teacher today in a Twin Cities public school who teaches in a school that's very heavily minority. And this teacher was saying that minority students there, by and large, reject this whole ideology, which is demeaning to them and tells them that they're victims, they can't succeed. So you are very right about that. And of course, the white elite establishment is heavily, heavily pushing this in the world of education.
Yeah, it's just talk about oppression, right? That's where the true oppression is coming from.
Right.
It's just so disturbing.
In some of your writings, Catherine, you've talked about the three ideological tenets that Minnesota's new ethnic studies standards seek to aggressively teach Minnesota students. You know, can you break that down for us a little bit?
Sure. And these are the sort of fundamental tenets of critical race theory. What ethnic studies is kind of the source of this and more. So the tenets are really the same. Kids learn that their skin color determines who they are, their identity. They learn that life is a never-ending power struggle between oppressor and victim groups, again, based on skin color, among other traits. And they learn that American history is a doleful story that should create guilt in white students, story of oppression, marginalization, injustice, et cetera, that the world is bleak and that people with white skin and males in particular are to blame for this dastardly state of affairs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and especially white men, right?
White men, my gosh. I was just looking at a California ethnic studies curriculum, and it has a matrix where kids have to say, who is to blame for all these terrible things? Right down the line, the answer is white men, white men, white men.
Wow.
I mean, you got to see it to believe it.
Wow. Wow. And this is an assignment that the students had in California, is what you're saying, right?
This is a curriculum. Created by the people who are behind the what we're seeing here in Minnesota today.
Okay. And I know we've talked about this before, Catherine, but don't you find it interesting that there is such a similarity between these three tenets that you just mentioned, you know, the skin color as your identity for your group, are basically splitting us into groups by skin color, that there's a power struggle between victim/oppressed, and that the U.S. Has a history of oppression. Don't you think that sounds very similar to the communist manifesto and this whole idea of, you know, the proletariat and the bourgeois? We've really just replaced proletariat and bourgeois with skin color as the oppressed versus the victim. Do you see a lot of similarity there?
No question. Yeah. And it is not only that, that you see it theoretically expressed. Mm-hmm. This is the campaign strategy that was a centerpiece with Vladimir Lenin in the Ukraine, say. It has to do with creating divisions among social groups, getting people to kind of fall into a tribal mentality and rubbing raw these resentments that you create or you fan, and then into the chaos that results step these folks. This is exactly the recipe followed with the Cultural Revolution in China, which really relied on young people, radicalizing, indoctrinating young people, and they go around, sort of creating a new world and tearing down the old, thinking they're doing a good thing.
Mm-hmm. So really, this whole racial issue is a Trojan horse to usher in some of these communist ideas and ideals into our culture, wouldn't you say, maybe?
Well, and Marxist, and you just have to ask yourself, how could a thinking person adopt this kind of program with the idea it would help young minority children
succeed?
You know, anybody can see when you tell them that they have no agency, that they're perpetual victims, that they should be constantly angry. Instead of teaching them to read and write, you teach them to resist. How are they ever going to get a job or keep a family together?
Yeah.
It's so destructive.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, there are a lot of sort of followers who don't get it, but the folks behind it clearly do.
They know what they're doing.
Well, think about the double-edged sword on that, too. You know, we talk about the content that's being removed from social studies standards.
Yeah.
They're not talking about these communist regimes that, you know, came to surface in the 20th century and what the fallout was from that.
Right.
So the people that are, you know, being indoctrinated with this today will never know the fallout if they don't have the historical understanding.
Yes, that is an excellent point. Yeah. Well, I know you mentioned the term resistance a few times and that is a big part of the ethnic studies strand. And maybe you've covered a little bit of this, but are there some specifics around how that whole element of the strand will play out in Minnesota's K-12 classrooms?
You bet. And I think one that really should catch parents' eye is the new anti-policing benchmarks that were introduced in this final draft, not in the second, not in the first.
Wow.
But you understand this when you come to understand that the forces behind ethnic studies, which again, you know, sprang directly from the 1968 student strikes and riots in Berkeley, et cetera, these are people like Angela Davis, who was a radical Black activist who believed in abolition of prisons, abolition of police, abolition of border controls. No, I mean, it's all there. You just need to Google it.
Yeah.
And so what we see, of course, we don't hear it exactly this way in our standards, but kids are supposed to study under ethnic studies standards. They include a requirement that they, quote, understand the roots of contemporary systems of oppression. Well, one of those is police, you know, our law enforcement. So you see that the standards will require first graders to examine contemporary policing and its historical roots in early America.
First graders.
Well, fifth graders.
Oh, fifth graders.
So you just,
okay, still.
You just push a little into, you look at the Education for Minnesota website, people who are responsible for these standards in part, and what do you see? Well, they've got a report on there that says that contemporary police forces sprang directly from slave patrols and Indian removal posses from, you know, the 1860s. Yep, right there. It's a curriculum they've already got written, and it matches, they say, the Minnesota K-12 standards. And then sixth graders have to study what they call the goals, offenses, penalties, et cetera, of Minnesota's juvenile justice system and evaluate the impact on youth, including those from historically disenfranchised groups. We know what they're going to say about that. Mm-hmm. And high schoolers have to, quote, explore how criminality is constructed, that is, made up, and what makes a person a criminal. So they're saying, well, if you read the Education for Liberation report and curriculum, you find that they say there that students, minority students who are troublesome and, do bad things in school are not responsible for this because they are consciously or unconsciously responding to the racism that oppresses them.
Wow.
So they can't be blamed for misconduct in school. Talk about infantilizing.
That's for sure. Not only that, but setting them up for a lifetime of failure. Because if you cannot allow kids to just run rampant. And we know that that's what's happening in a lot of our, especially inner city schools. And we've had Aaron Benner on a few times to tell his story. And
wonderful.
He's a Black man who tried to resist all of this and still got met with being pushed out of his position.
Pushed out.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
It is.
Well, think about
really
what this means for the lives of, say, a 16-year-old Black student who is told for years that he should be resisting the police, and then some kind of police encounter, and he resists
right
every single incident that gets into the headlines, where there's a black person who is being in a police encounter, that person resists arrest, threatens the police, whatever. That is so dangerous.
Yeah.
That's putting the lives of these kids in danger to tell them that they should be doing this because police are such unjust, and there's
right.
modern day slave patrols.
It's just completely backwards from the way it should be. It is unbelievable.
You know, Catherine, let's shift to the parents here. We'll put ourselves in their shoes here for a moment. Okay, they're maybe oblivious to what we're talking about here. Whether or not they go and they do the research for themselves and see what this would all entail in terms of their children's education, what can they expect, though, in terms of an outcome of such a biased and misleading approach in this instruction if they allow their children to undergo this type of indoctrination?
Well, I think every good thing they try to teach their children in the home is likely, or many of those good things, to be contradicted and mocked. I mean, in the classroom, if you look at this, what I mentioned before about the depiction of families' religions as being used to justify imperialism, colonization, slavery, warfare, etc. This is radical doubt of what's at the heart of many families' notion of the meaning of life, what it is to be a human being.
Right.
And it's going to start in kindergarten.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Catherine, you've been researching and writing a lot on this topic. How do you think our public schools got sucked into promoting and teaching this extremist agenda in the first place?
Well, this idea of what it is to be an American and what it is to be a human being has been prevalent in our institutions of higher learning for decades. Mm-hmm. The ethnic studies departments, such as Black studies, Hispanic studies, et cetera, women's studies, these were all created initially in the late 60s because of the sort of riots that took place to the campus unrest. You know, remember Cornell, 1969, I think, where Black militant students took over the president. I mean, we're talking 50 years ago. So this is the course. This is what happened in 50 years, that this radical stuff that used to be on the fringe is now a massive industry, at the heart of our DEI, that is diversity, equity, inclusion, in our universities and our teachers' colleges have been teaching this for 20 years. And the NEA, the National Education Association, the union, is very much a supporter of this ideology.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And I think it was really the sort of George Floyd, Black Lives Matter, huge push during COVID, and the decision by the Department of Education here in Minnesota to stack the Standards Drafting Committee with people who believe that, to omit social studies, subject matter experts.
Mm-hmm.
They knew exactly what they wanted to put in place, and now they've done it, at least unless we can stop it.
Yeah. So disturbing. Well, Catherine, we are already out of time, and I just want to say thank you again for your excellent work, and we'll invite you on in a couple months after you've done a little bit more research on the background of these standards and the people behind them. And I just hope that all of our listeners will take the time to go read these standards for themselves and understand the impact that they'll be having on their children. And if you have concerns about that you will speak out about it and contact your legislator if you need to do that. So thank you so much for joining us. And thank you, Mark.
Yep, nice to see you again.
Yes, nice to see you. And listen to this podcast at savetheclassroom.com. Good night.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.